Welcome back to My Radio at stanpelke.com.
Hi, this is Stan Pelke welcoming you to the 12th podcast featuring readings from my novel, Project Earth, Dawn of Defiance. Today's episode brings Chapter 6 to its conclusion.
This was a dark place, a place Awandor had feared since she was a little girl, long before she heard the secret history from the ancient widows 3 days before. Her father had not taught her his most secret songs, as he had taught them to the Prime Widow, but from her earliest days she had heard him whisper, "Do not trust the Bloodfang God, and never sing his songs, dear one." And now, fighting against the terror and panic that was welling up inside her, Awandor pushed forward into the clearing with the altar to the Old One at its center. The secret history did little to assuage her fears. Stinking weeds and sharp, thorny twigs nipped Awandor's ankles as she walked purposefully toward the stone monument. It was fitting, she thought, that that cursed soil only supported foul, stinking, scratching plants. Yet even as she whispered old incantations and tried to draw upon the strength of the secret woman, Awandor knew she was only a breath or two away from a complete collapse into panic. The darkness and foreboding that emanated from the altar was palpable. Without realizing it, she tightened her grip even more on the old, stout walking staff, a final gift from the Prime Widow. Awandor had spent an entire day in the company of the Prime Widow and Ezhtel Nira, and she had mastered 3 songs for this journey. As the sun began to set that day, the Prime Widow had taken her to a hidden door in the floor near the cots and told her to descend into a secret vault below the longhouse. Ezhtel Nira had come with her, whispering about this forgotten relic and that, objects Awandor had never seen before and could not possibly have imagined existed. Many were made of a hard, cold substance like stone, but not stone, and shaped into sharp angles or smooth, bending surfaces. At the far end of the vault was the staff, wooden, as thick as her wrist, and tipped with more of the cold, strange material. "It is the staff of the hunter," Ezhtel Nira had sighed. "Use it well." And now Awandor did so, using it to clear her way of the stinging brambles and the many broken, gnarled tree limbs that had fallen into the clearing. Finally, despite fear and worry and lack of full understanding, Bright Sparrow stood before the altar. "Take the path of the Bloodfang God," she whispered. Years and years ago, angry villagers trying to free themselves from the tyranny of the Old One had defaced the altar, scouring away painted images on its side and front and toppling a simple carved rock statue of the Bloodfang God that had once stood on the far side of the altar. The head of the statue had broken off from the rest of the statue and had rolled several feet away, even after the Old One's worship had begun again under the patronage of First Fist's family. No one dared touch the stone head, and it had been left on the ground where it had fallen many years before. Awandor could see it now, only 2 yards away from her, watching her with hollowed-out spaces once meant to be crude eyes. She lifted her hands between herself and the stone face in a warding-off gesture to protect herself from its wicked gaze. A foot from the altar, Awandor closed her eyes and waited. The spiritual darkness floated all around her now, like smoke from a nighttime fire, unseen beyond the reach of the fire's illuminating light, but smelled and tasted in the air. "I will not fear you," she whispered, yet her heart beat rapidly in her chest. She took a deep breath and waited, eyes shut. After a few minutes, she finally found her voice and softly sang the first of the songs the Prime Widow had taught her, the first of the songs her father had long protected. And when it was over, why didn't the secret woman tell her what to do next? How was she to take the path of the Blood Fang God if she did not know where it led from here? A bird screeched above her, but Bright Sparrow remained in command of her nerves. A cold breeze swirled along the ground, rustling old leaves and sending more of the stinking pollen into the air. She refused to move. "I will not leave," she yelled into the wind. Then she sang the song a second time. This time, as she concluded the song, Awandor, the Bright Sparrow, settled herself even more firmly into her own meditative darkness and simply waited. She felt the breeze touch her neck. She heard insects buzz around her and then twist and twirl back toward the trees. She heard birds far off in the woods. And then, as her perception widened and deepened, it almost seemed that she could hear the villagers far off, even her own knife priest, as he sat beside the river, filled with dream-induced anxiety. She reached out even further, and Bright Sparrow thought that she could hear the song of the stars hidden behind the daytime veil. And then it reached her true ears, the soft hum. Keeping her eyes firmly shut and careful not to touch the stone of the altar, Awandor carefully made her way to the left, touching forward gingerly with her foot, then placing one foot firmly down in its new place, then prodding the staff against the altar's stones to make sure she did not wander too far from it. And then she began the whole process again and took another tentative step, and then another, and another, and yet another. Before long, eyes still closed, Awandor reached the rear of the altar. The hum was coming from a stone resting on the ground. Bright Sparrow knelt beside the altar and reached toward the spot where the ground and the altar met. Her eyes were still closed, but she knew precisely where her hands were, where the stone was, and where the soil was. Her hand hovered for just a moment above the surface of the stone resting on the ground closest to her feet. She could feel the hum coming from its surface. Then she reached forward. Awandor's hand moved easily through the stone surface and into a space beyond. She now opened her eyes. To their simple perception, her hand and part of her arm appeared to have been swallowed up by the stone. Yet she could easily move her hand and arm deeper into the stone and then back out. Awandor finally pulled her hand completely out and touched her own face, just to be absolutely certain that she still had that hand. Then she plunged it back through the stone surface again. Now under the guidance of the secret woman, Awandor allowed her fingers to explore the space beyond the stone surface. To the right, it seemed that there were very thin tree roots, but they were strangely smooth, warm to the touch, and unbreakable. To the left, there were a series of rough surfaces. In many places, the rough spots seemed especially pronounced. They were in a pattern, like beads sewn on a ritual garment. Above her hand was an impossibly smooth surface, inert, with absolutely no life to it. Awandor leaned in closer to the altar and felt along the left side, rough surface even more thoroughly. As she touched the bead-like surface again, a memory sprang to life within her mind. She was 8 years old again, the chosen disciple of Eztalnira. It was the night of the midwinter dance, the night when the darkness was longest and the daylight shortest. Snow had fallen across the village and the fields, and the ancient widows and their retinue had settled into the longhouse for the winter ahead. Awandor had taken her place at the far end of the longhouse, having helped Eztalnira dress in her ritual winter gown, but now relegated to the corner with the other girls. The elderly women dominated the main space and danced and danced. The handful of male musicians who lived in the turf huts were off in the far corner opposite Awandor, while three male devotees sat near the door guarding it against the night. Awandor was spellbound as the women moved with the music and sang their ancient songs in their aging, failing voices. At the height of the dance, Awandor's eyes were drawn to the pattern of beads and shells sewn into the dress of the Prime Widow. Even then, years earlier, the Prime Widow was so aged that she could barely keep pace with the other elderly women, yet she gracefully swayed with the music. Her footwork was flawed, even haphazard at times, but her arms had maintained their elegance of movement. Awandor blinked, and as her eyes opened again, the Prime Widow had just begun to turn into the light of the fire. The beads and the shells flashed in the firelight, and their pattern and its magic filled her mind. In this moment now of peace and confidence, Awandor clearly saw the pattern. She had only thought about that dance a few times in the years since that night, but she had not thought about the dress or the pattern or the magic of the firelight even once. Now she clearly saw the pattern, saw it more clearly than she had even as a child, and she felt that pattern in the surface on the left-hand side of the small stone chamber. And without even thinking, she began to push the bead-like projections into the stone until she had reproduced the pattern of the dress. Awandor pulled her hand back out through the stone surface and sat back on her haunches. The soft humming had stopped. There was the faintest sound of stone rubbing against stone. As she looked up, she saw that a series of large stones near the base of the altar were retracting into the ground, almost noiselessly. When the movement had stopped, a sizable gap, large enough for her to squeeze through, awaited. Awandor waited silently. She had no desire to slide through the opening into the darkness beyond, yet she knew that she must. She reached for the hunter's staff and then eased herself through the space that had opened and dropped down into the darkness. When her feet reached solid earth again, she was only about 3 feet below ground, but there was the start of a tunnel which led off in the direction of the clearing in front of the stone altar above ground. At first, Awandor had to crawl forward, but as the tunnel descended, it also widened to her sides, and the roof above her rose. After a few minutes, she could stand upright. Just as the faint light coming from the opening behind her was spent, her staff struck a new kind of surface and created a bright musical tone rather than a dull thud. She could barely see now, but Awandor knelt down and touched the ground with her hands. Sure enough, her feet were planted on rock and dirt, irregular and moist, but just past her feet was a perfectly smooth surface, such as she had never felt before. This was neither rock nor dirt, and it was cold to the touch. It might have been much the same material that the relics at the elder home had been made of. Squaring her shoulders and tightening her grip on the staff, Awandor moved forward. As her feet passed onto the new surface, a strange glow began to come from the ceiling above, just enough to light her way. Awandor had barely gone 5 more steps when there was a strange howl, and then not more than 10 feet ahead of her, a masked figure lurched into view from the shadows. It was much taller than Awandor, and much broader, and it raised its hands in a gesture of warning. Awandor answered with a gesture of her own intended to ward off the stranger. It suddenly came at her at a far greater pace than she would have thought possible, and she raised the staff to protect her face and chest. and then the stranger passed right through her and was gone. It took her several moments to recover from the terror of that phantom. After her heart had steadied itself again, Awandor went another 20 steps and reached the end of the tunnel. It had leveled out once more, but there was no sign of the opening behind her. She began to touch the wall before her, high, low, to the right, to the left. Unlike the magic stone surface at the back of the altar above, this wall was solid. She was about to turn back when her hand brushed against the smallest protruding feature, and a loud clicking filled the tunnel, and the stone wall slid aside and into the wall to her left. Awandor gasped as the space beyond came into view. It was another tunnel, as wide and tall as the one she was in, but occupied on each side by a row of guardian wolves. Again, she raised her staff to protect herself, though she knew it would do little good against so many beasts. She was about to begin the second song when she noticed by the pale light cast by the strange ceiling that the wolves did not move. They did not even look at her. After much hesitation, she finally reached out and touched the nearest one. He was cold, deathly cold. Still, neither that one nor any other made the slightest motion, and so she began the long, anxious walk down the middle of their monstrous assembly. Halfway down its length, the tunnel began to bend toward the left. After another 40 steps or so, Awandor could no longer see the spot where the second door had opened. A few more steps, and she reached the end of the line of wolves. Another closed door awaited her, but this time she studied its surface first, found the protruding feature, touched that and that alone, and waited as this door also moved aside for her. A world of wonders awaited Awandor beyond the second door as a large chamber came into view. On the ground before her, stretching out in all directions, was a massive pattern of colored, polished stones and shells that took the form of circles within circles within circles. She had never seen anything so beautiful before in all her life, and Awandor was sure she was desecrating something sacred by walking on it. Beyond the pattern on the ground, some 30 paces from her in all directions, she could just make out jet black walls. The ceiling, however, was lost high above in shadows. Between her and the walls in every direction were shimmering curtains of light. Patterns such as she had never imagined raced across the curtains. Some of the patterns seemed to be almost like icons drawn into the ritual objects that the villagers made. Others seemed like they mimicked the stars of the nighttime sky. She approached one of these curtains and reached out, but there was nothing of substance there. Her hand passed through but did not disrupt the fundamental patterns. Awandor passed right through one curtain, then another, but they were unaffected by her movements. She walked toward the far end of the chamber and stopped in front of the widest and tallest of these curtains. All along its shimmering surface were square spaces like windows in a wall, and in each window she saw different parts of her world. In some, Awandor saw the trees of the forest she had passed through minutes earlier. In another, she saw the clearing. In others, the river that ran through the village, and in many, images of the village itself. And there were people she knew. In one, she even thought she saw Telkor Torin sitting by the river, tending to a new axe head. She reached towards his image, but there was nothing there to touch. The curtains of light remained unaffected by her hand. A buzzing began, like the sound made by a swarm of angry bees forced from their nest in an old dead tree by a mother bear in search of honey. Awandor looked toward the far wall and saw a strange red light flashing. Yet another door opened, but this time the space beyond was occupied. Two figures, dressed all in black, lurched through the door and ran toward her. Though they did not speak, Awandor knew this was different from the phantom at the first door. There was no mistaking their intent as they drew stick-like objects from their belts. Once more, Awandor raised her staff and took her most aggressive posture. That slowed their pace, and the two strangers finally stopped about 5 feet from her. They studied her, and she studied them. They had faces like the men of the village, though without beards, but their clothing was very strange. There were no seams that she could see, and while her clothes loosely hung from her body, their clothes fit tightly to theirs, and their clothes were identical. In place of hide and cloth coverings for their feet, they had sturdy coverings that reached almost to their knees. One of the men finally began to speak in a threatening tone, but Awandor did not understand his words. She scowled at them and shook the tip of the staff at them, and then one lunged at her. Swiftly, like a deer, Awandor bounded back 2 feet even as she swung the staff upward toward the first man's head. The staff tip struck him hard in the temple, and he crumpled to the floor, groaning in pain. With her counterswing, Awandor tripped the second man, and he hit the smooth, cold floor with a loud thud. She swung once more and knocked the second man out cold. Awandor stooped down and grabbed one of the weapons of the fallen men and then dashed through the next door. No sooner had Awandor passed into the next room than she cried out in fear as she came face to face with a blood beast. But like the wolves in the outer tunnel, the creature was completely still. She walked carefully past the beast, then found herself staring at an inert great king deer. Its white hide shone under the strange light from the ceiling. It looked just like the king deer that Telkor Torin had killed. She turned and saw the strangest sight yet. On a long table beside the wall were what looked like guardian wolf limbs, detached from their bodies. She approached the table and saw more of the tree root-like objects sticking out of each of the limbs. She lifted one carefully and touched the tube-like objects and the cold material where bone should have been. At the very end of the table stood the skeleton of a guardian wolf, but it too was made of the shiny cold material and not of bone. One of the two men was suddenly in the room, yelling loudly at her as blood flowed from the wound on his forehead. Awandor backed slowly away, the staff in front of her, and then 2 guardian wolves were at the door behind the man, staring at her with wide eyes and snarling. "Sing the song," a voice whispered in her head, and then she began to sing the second song. The wolves howled and snarled, but suddenly one froze in its place. The second wolf growled once more and then charged at Awandor. The guardian wolf was in the air, leaping toward her. Bright Sparrow closed her eyes even as she swung the staff. And then there was a yelp. She opened her eyes as the man began to bellow with rage. The skeletal wolf had jumped off the table at the last possible moment and had thrown itself into the gaping jaws of the guardian wolf as it pounced at Awandor. The 2 creatures were now rolling on the floor, rising, biting each other, rolling over again. And all the while the man yelled and yelled. Another movement by the far doorway caught Bright Sparrow's eye. Yet another guardian wolf had arrived, and it had clearly seen her. She waited no longer but began to dash toward the end of the room and toward yet another doorway. This time the door opened for her, sliding upward into the rock ceiling. She could still hear the fighting behind her and the sound of the approaching guardian wolf, and she ran. There was no room beyond, just a narrow tunnel, much like the first one she had been in, with the strange cold light coming from the ceiling. Awandor ran and ran. She knew what that guardian wolf would do to her when it caught her. As she ran, she saw a number of other tunnels branch out to her left and right, but she continued going straight ahead. Soon the smooth surface beneath her feet gave way to rock and soil. She turned to see the wolf almost upon her. She gasped and swung at it. The cold material on the end of the staff caught part of the rocky ground and sent sparks flying. The creature backed away for a moment, then lunged at her. Bright Sparrow swung hard again and knocked it aside, but the weight of the creature against the staff sent a searing pain up her arm and into her shoulder. She would not have many more of those attacks in her. On and on she ran. The creature kept pace but did not close the gap. It seemed to know that eventually Bright Sparrow would run out of strength, and then it could attack without fear. Or so went Awandor's thoughts. She had no idea how far the tunnel went, nor where, but she knew she could not keep running all evening. And then in the faint light, she saw that she was coming toward a junction where the path branched into 5 smaller tunnels. "Which way?" she panted into the darkness all around her. Reason was gone now, and there was no clear help from any guardian spirits. Awandor simply followed the path farthest to her right. The guardian wolf reached the junction, stopped, and howled. Bright Sparrow stumbled as she looked back at it, then picked herself up as it came at her again, and now it was closing on her. She tried to run harder, but even now she could see she was approaching the end of the tunnel. A rocky wall was just coming into view, illuminated by the last bit of light from the ceiling above. The wolf also ran harder toward her. Awindor reached the wall and put her back to it, raised the staff in front of her, and prepared for her last desperate defense. She was too winded to try to sing the second song, but she was not sure it would work. It had only been partially effective back in the large chamber. The wolf slowed as it approached, then stopped 10 feet from her, eyeing Awindor intently. Even from this distance, it was trying to sniff her to make out what she was. "Come on, then," she yelled at it. "I'll have one more go at you before I am done." The wolf began to snarl, then dashed at her. Sure enough, she took one more swing, felt the muscle in her shoulder pull, but saw the beast fall back with a yelp. Bright Sparrow steadied herself and moved into the corner where the walls of the tunnel met. And now the secret woman moved through the space. Awindor felt a cool breeze brush her ear. Glancing up, she saw a small crevice just above her head. It looked wide enough for her to squeeze through. She would need time to pull herself up and through that. The wolf snarled again and edged a little bit closer. Bright Sparrow was almost out of time. Keeping her right hand on the staff and her eyes firmly on the wolf, she squatted down and picked up several stones with her left hand. Then she rose to her full height and began to yell at the beast. It hesitated, and then she threw a stone. It struck the wolf's nose, and the creature yelped and backed away. Then she threw another and a third. The wolf now retreated even further. Awindor set the staff against the wall, jumped up, caught the edge of the crevice, and pulled. Her shoulder burned with pain and she cried out, but she did not let go. The wolf, sensing something was changing, now leaped forward. Awindor pulled herself in, but the beast's teeth just caught her left ankle. She pulled her legs in and watched it from the safety of the crevice. When the wolf jumped up, their noses could have almost touched, but the beast seemed unable to comprehend how to get in. It paced back a ways, then dashed forward again, leaped, and missed her yet again. The third time, the wolf circled back to prepare to dash forward. Awindor reached out of the hole, grabbed the staff, and pulled it in with her. As the wolf jumped, Awindor thrust the staff straight out and caught the monster in the gut, hard. It fell backward and landed with a loud thud on the ground and did not move. She sighed and lay still in the crevice. The air was still moving around her, and after she had rested for a few minutes, Awindor tore part of her tunic off and wrapped it around her wounded ankle. Then she crawled along in the crevice, seeking the source of the air. It was not long before the faint light from the ceiling in the tunnel behind her was completely lost. Trusting now only in the secret woman and the fresher air ahead, Awindor kept going forward. Suddenly, her hand found no rock in front of her. It was pitch black all around. She lay still for several moments, uncertain what to do next. Could she risk going back? Maybe one of the other tunnels led to a way out. No, a path was for going somewhere, not for wandering aimlessly, and she was certain she had started down the path as commanded. So she gently felt out into the pitch darkness with her left hand. The crevice definitely opened up ahead of her. Now she could feel a rough stone wall pulling away from beneath her face. But how far down did it go before reaching a floor? She lay flat and reached down as far as she could. Nothing. Then she pulled the staff out and lowered it as far as possible. Nothing. Awindor closed her eyes tightly, willing herself not to cry with fear and exhaustion. But as she pulled the staff back into the crevice, she noticed that the strange material at its tip was beginning to glow, like the ceilings in these strange caves. She thrust the staff back out into the darkness, and the material glowed even more brightly. She craned her head out as far as she dared and saw that some 10 feet above her there was another ceiling, and small orbs had begun to glow in it. Then she looked down. The material in the staff was shining almost as brightly now as the ceiling orbs high above, and she could finally see the floor of this latest cave. It was perhaps 10 feet below. Awindor was beside herself with joy. She removed her belt and tied one end to the staff and the other to her right wrist, then carefully slid out of the crevice. She tried not to dangle too long, as her shoulder was in much pain, but she wanted to be sure the staff was positioned so that it would not come down squarely on her head. Then she let go. Priestess and staff landed side by side on a cold, smooth floor, and neither any worse for wear. As her eyes continued to adjust to the faint light, she saw that she was in the largest of the chambers yet. But unlike the others, there was virtually no noise, and nothing but long, smooth cylinders running parallel to the ground the length of the chamber. She turned to her left and followed these now by the light of the staff. On and on the cylinders went, and on Bright Sparrow followed. After what felt to her as the first mile, she thought for certain that she should be coming to the end of the chamber, yet each step brought her no closer to its end. Awendor finally sat down to rest and to pray. She had escaped the wolf and the strange men, but what good was that if she was trapped forever in this hopeless tunnel? Bright Sparrow brushed her hair out of her face and looked up and down, left and right, toward the ceiling, and down along the ground by the cylinders. "What now? Show me, lady." She was about to stand up again, despite exhaustion, hunger, and growing despair, when a faint gleam attracted her attention. She crawled across the tunnel to the side on which the cylinders ran and brushed dust and dirt from a small, uneven spot on the ground. As she worked, more polished stone was uncovered. It was this that had caught her eye a moment ago. When she had finished, she had uncovered a smooth, flat stone roughly the size of her two hands. In the middle was a sign of the ancient widows, with an arrow pointing toward the cylinders. Bright Sparrow rose and began to scratch at the ground with the tip of the staff. The soil was not very firm, and suddenly the staff went right through the ground. Bright Sparrow fell to her knees and dug hastily. Before long, she had opened up a small shaft that led away from her, right beneath the cylinders. She stuck the staff into the shaft and peered in after it, but its illumination was weak. What she saw gave her little hope, more crawling, but she had no choice. In she went, the staff leading the way. It was not long before the strange material on the end of the staff stopped glowing. Awendor pressed on carefully for a few more paces. Once more fresher air twisted around her. She crawled a few more feet and felt the narrow space around her suddenly open up. The floor continued on as it had, but the walls and ceiling suddenly lifted away from her. The third song, she thought. She began to sing. No more than 10 words had passed her lips, but the cavern into which she had crawled began to grow brighter. Some 20 feet from her stood a simple altar to the secret woman, and all around it in the rocky ground were orbs like the ones she had encountered far back in the earlier caves and tunnels. Awendor rose and made her way to the altar. It was covered with sacred signs. Some were familiar to her from her childhood training. Some seemed to be variations of images she knew. Some were completely unfamiliar. The light grew even brighter, and Awendor made her way behind the altar. There she found what could only be a very old burial mound. She squatted down to look more carefully and saw two of the most beautifully fashioned stone knives she had ever seen resting at one end. "I must take those to Telkor Torin," she thought. As she picked them up, another smooth stone was revealed. She turned in the direction of its arrow and saw yet another thin opening in the cave wall. "So be it," she said. Awendor rose and made a gesture of thanks toward the altar and another toward the burial mound, then slipped through the crevice. This time, she was able to stay standing, but the space was only wide enough to squeeze through sideways. But there was a faint light ahead of her, and she pushed on. Just as the ceiling began to slope downward and the walls pulled in even more tightly, Awendor reached the end. She stood beside the thinnest of cracks, yet there was no mistaking it. The outside world awaited her just beyond that crack, and out she squeezed herself, falling over into cool sand as she collapsed into a heap, filthy, bloody, winded. Awendor was not sure how long she had slept in the sand, but she blinked awake as the light of the setting sun poured over her face. She turned her head toward the west to bask in that marvelous light, and then gasped. Far off in the mountains in the west, The sun was just about to fall behind a peculiar outcropping of rock. Without realizing it, she had entered into the forest site. It was as if her mind raced upward into those mountains, and in that last moment of sunlight, she saw before her a narrow archway beyond which the sun set. "Take the path of the Bloodfang God," she whispered to herself. This was an original work of music and text by Stan Pelkey. Please note that any unauthorized broadcasting, public performance, copying, or re-recording of this program, its story, or its music is an infringement of copyright.